We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Away we go, episode 787 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, the day before a big dinner date for the Commanders. NFL insider Jordan Schultz of Bleacher Report, he on X on Tuesday morning reported that the Commanders were set to have dinner with Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy in Michigan on Thursday evening, as Michigan's pro day is on Friday. Dinner with J.J. for the Commanders on Thursday evening. Is this a big deal? Not really. No. The Commanders have met slash will meet slash should meet with all of the perceived top quarterbacks in the 2024 NFL draft, in which our team has the number 2 overall pick. There is no such thing as too much due diligence for our team with the quarterbacks in this draft. What the team is going to do with that number 2 overall pick is so important. Every stone should be unturned. Every data point should be identified. Every I should be dotted. Every T should be crossed. In fact, I would recommend dotting the T's and crossing the I's. Go overboard. Go beyond what is normal. Hello and welcome to this Wednesday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. What was, as of Tuesday evening, the number 61 podcast in the country in the U.S. football category on Apple Podcasts. Number 61 among the who knows how many thousands of football podcasts in this country. That is a credit to you, so thank you. A supersized Commander segment, next segment, during which I'll discuss the news of Tuesday morning. Unrestricted free agent offensive tackle Cornelius Lucas reportedly agreeing to re-sign with the team via a one-year deal. And we'll get right to our guest, Commanders insider Ben Standig of The Athletic. And what we're going to do with Ben is take a bigger picture examination of all that the Commanders have done in free agency so far this offseason, starting with what the team's activity in free agency tells us about the team's rebuilding, or should I say recalibration plan. As remember, head coach Dan Quinn, during his introductory press conference back on February 5th, emphasized recalibrate, not rebuild.
This is a recalibrate, you know, finding our north again. And that starts, you know, with our identity of our club. So, no, you will not hear me say the word rebuild at all.
Yes, Dan, thank you. Recalibrate, not rebuild. We also, with Ben Standig, will assess various other aspects of the Commanders' work in free agency, including their contractual strategy, the role of holdover Senior Vice President of Football Administration Rob Rogers, and whether the team is looking to carry over a sizable amount of salary cap space into next offseason. And we, with Ben, will get into various other items, among them, should the Commanders, in hindsight, have traded edge defender Montez Sweat, and why truly the team traded quarterback Sam Howell. All of that and more with Ben Standig next segment. Also on the show, college basketball. The NCAA tournament has begun, and it began with losses for both Virginia and Howard. Each team was part of one of the first four games, which took place at UD Arena in Dayton, Ohio. Number 10-seeded Virginia lost to number 10-seeded Colorado State 67-42 late night on Tuesday night for yet another early exit for the Cavaliers in an NCAA tournament. And number 16-seeded Howard lost to number 16-seeded Wagner 71-68 on Tuesday evening, despite the Bison trimming a 17-point second half deficit to 1 in the final minute. Winning on Tuesday night was Virginia Tech. The number 3-seeded Hokies slammed Richmond 74-58 at Castle Coliseum in Blacksburg, Virginia, late night on Tuesday night in the first round of the NIT. And I'll talk Wizards. They are tanking, they are rebuilding, and they these days are depleted. And so the Wizards on Tuesday night got routed by the Houston Rockets 137-114 at Capital One Arena to fall to an NBA worst 11-58 this regular season. Before we get to some feedback, another free agent defection for the Commanders. The Buffalo Bills on Tuesday afternoon announced the signing of Commanders unrestricted free agent edge defender Casey Tuhill. The Bills last Friday officially announced the signing of Commanders unrestricted free agent receiver Curtis Samuel. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Mark Pryor, as in former United States Senator Mark Pryor. He was an Arkansas senator from 2003 to 2015. He, prior to that, was the Attorney General of Arkansas. He went to Walt Whitman High School in Bethesda, Maryland. He is a loyal listener of this podcast. He is a big Commanders fan. Writes Senator Pryor about the Commanders' free agent frenzy. What a week! I have never seen anything like it. Great job on the show, as always. We are all glad that you've been there to walk us through the first week of free agency. I hope that you can cover these three topics soon. Number one, we started with about $90 million in cap room. I understand that it is more complex given new league numbers, etc. So how much cap room do we have remaining? Number two, given that management appears to be looking over the roster and finding weak spots and then filling those with players who will be upgrades, hopefully, what are your thoughts on the needs remaining to cover in the draft? I know that you follow the principle of best player available, so let me ask the question in a different way. How do you see this draft making the Commanders a better team? And number three, given the new players who we have under contract and the terms and lengths of the new deals, and assuming that we do not go out and get a player for a ton of money, are we positioned for another good free agency season in 2025? That is, are we blowing it all in 2024, or will we have flexibility next offseason too? Thank you for the email, Senator. Great to hear from you. I yield my time to the Senator from Arkansas. So the Commanders per overthecap.com prior to the re-signing of Cornelius Lucas still had the most salary cap space in the NFL, $56.732 million, and still had the most effective cap space in the NFL, $46.415 million. Effective cap space simply accounts for a team having to have at least 51 players on the active roster and accounts for a team's projected draft class. And so regarding the 2025 offseason, the Commanders are positioned to have plenty of cap space for that offseason because they can carry over cap space from this league year to next league year. And at this point, I don't see the Commanders spending that much more in free agency this offseason. The bulk of the signings are almost certainly done. There will be more signings, but I would think that the majority already have taken place. As far as the 2024 draft making the Commanders better, as yes, I do not advocate for drafting for need. So the draft is perceived to be good at the following positions: quarterback, offensive tackle, receiver, and corner. Fortunately for our team, all of those positions are positions of need. And speaking of offensive tackle, email from Stuart Moore, the general manager of Nova Fireplace and Stove, on how the Commanders should perhaps address left tackle in the 2024 NFL Draft. Right, Stu, you think the Commanders would package their 2 second-rounders to move back into the first round and grab a left tackle? Would you do it? Thank you for the emails, too. Well, it depends on how I evaluated the offensive tackles in the draft, but I definitely would be open to trading back into the first round, especially considering that the team with the first round selection would get 5 years of team control as opposed to 4 years via the fifth-year option. The Commanders have 2 second-round picks in the 2024 draft, picks numbers 36 and 40 overall. The thing is, the 2024 draft is considered to be a really good draft for offensive tackles, so it may not be that the team has to trade back into the first round in order to get a really good left tackle. Understand, 8 of the top 29 players on Pro Football Focus's big board for the 2024 draft are offensive tackles. Yeah, 8 of the top 29. Notre Dame's Joe Alt, number 5. Oregon State's Talisa Fuaga, number 12. Washington's Troy Fautanu, number 13. Penn State's Olu Fashanu, who went to Gonzaga College High School in Washington, D.C., number 18. Alabama's J.C. Latham, number 21. Georgia's Amarius Mims, number 23. Duke's Graham Barton, number 24. And Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton, number 29. A lot of good offensive tackle prospects in the 2024 draft. Well, like a great left tackle, Nova Fireplace and Stove offers so much. Yes, spring is here, but are you prepared for next winter? Nova Fireplace and Stove offers fireplace safety inspections, fireplace tune-ups, and gas fireplace repairs. And if yours is a fireplace that burns wood, Nova Fireplace and Stove offers chimney safety inspections and chimney cleanings. And if you have a masonry fireplace, listen up. Nova Fireplace and Stove right now is offering the following deal to listeners of the Al Galdi podcast: an in-stock wood insert at an extremely discounted price, just $6,000 plus tax. The usual price is $9,000 plus tax, so this is a 33% discount, and the $6,000 plus tax includes installation, permit, and county/city inspection, and you can get a government-funded tax credit as well, up to $2,000, dropping the price to just $4,000, all things considered. Nova Fireplace and Stove is outstanding. It is family-owned. It is a 5-star dealer. Visit NovaFireplaceAndStove.com to check out customer reviews and call Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. Talk to General Manager Stuart Moore. He's a big Commanders fan. He's a loyal listener of this podcast. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. Nova Fireplace and Stove also installs generators, water heaters, security lights, and custom outdoor kitchens. There is so much that Nova Fireplace and Stove can do for you. Contact Nova Fireplace and Stove and get the customer service that you deserve. 571-513-3803, and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803, and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. If you are listening to this podcast via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can rate the podcast with a star rating. 5-star ratings are greatly appreciated. They help us out a lot. Thank you for doing them. We have more from the Commanders in free agency. Tuesday morning, multiple reports that unrestricted free agent offensive tackle Cornelius Lucas had agreed to re-sign with the team, a reported 1-year deal. The 2024 season will be Lucas's age 33 season. He is a big dude, listed as being 6'8", and he is a really dependable swing tackle. Here's all that you need to know. The Commanders re-signing Lucas this offseason marks a third time that the team has signed him. It initially signed him as an unrestricted free agent to a 2-year contract in March 2020, then re-signed him as an unrestricted free agent to a 2-year contract in March 2022, and now we have This latest re-signing, Lucas, over his four seasons with Washington 2020 through 2023, has started 31 regular season games and a playoff game. Lucas in the 2020 season was Washington's starting left tackle for 8 regular season games and for the 31-23 loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at FedEx Field in the wild card round of the playoffs. Lucas in the 2021 regular season made 7 starts, all of which came at right tackle. Lucas in the 2022 regular season made 12 starts, all of which were at right tackle, and Lucas in the 2023 regular season made 4 starts, all of which were at left tackle. Consider this. Cornelius Lucas, over 4 regular seasons with Washington, has made 31 starts, has played on 2,026 offensive snaps, and yet has committed a mere 6 penalties. A very dependable swing tackle. Lucas entered the NFL as an undrafted free agent with the Detroit Lions out of Kansas State in May 2014. Washington in 2020 was his 5th team in 5 seasons. So props to him for finding a home here and for having a nice NFL career. And so the number is 21. As in 21 signings / re-signings of unrestricted free agents by the Commanders since the hiring of Adam Peters as general manager on January 15th. 5 free agent acquisitions on offense. They are quarterback Marcus Mariota, tight end Zach Ertz, running back Austin Eckler, center Tyler Biadasz, and guard Nick Allegretti. 10 free agent acquisitions on defense. They are edge defenders Dorrance Armstrong Jr., Cleland Farrell, and Dante Fowler Jr. Linebackers Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu, Anthony Pittman, and Keandre Jones. Safety Jeremy Chinn, and corners Michael Davis and Noah Igbinoghene. 2 free agent acquisitions on special teams. They are kicker Brandon McManus and long snapper Tyler Ott. And then 4 re-signings. They are edge defender F.A. Obada, safety and special teams ace Jeremy Reeves, receiver and punt returner Jamison Crowder, and offensive tackle Cornelius Lucas. We welcome back to the Al Galdi podcast a man who has been all over what the Commanders have been doing in free agency, Commanders insider Ben Standig of The Athletic. Ben does such a good job of covering the Commanders. He's the host of the Standig Room Only podcast. You can follow him on X at Ben Standig. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Al, I'm doing well. Yeah, it's definitely one of those deals where you need the, you need to see the list of the players to know who's coming and going, because it is the number keeps changing. So yeah, it's been busy, but it's been interesting.
Yes, it has been. Commander's managing partner Josh Harris, as Philadelphia 76ers managing partner, famously greenlit The Process. You last July wrote a piece about what the Commanders engaging in The Process might look like. We now, via what has happened so far this offseason, have a better sense of what the team's rebuilding plan is. So on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being win now and 10 being a fully fledged embracing of the process, where would you say that the Commanders are on the process scale?
Wow, good question. You know, the NFL, you can do anything you want, but there's too many good players on every team, right? I mean, even the team, even this team, right? A year ago, you still had Terry McLaurin, you still had the 2 tackles, you had Curtis Samuel, you had functional players all over the place. It just didn't work. Obviously, they weren't intentionally tanking last year. I'm just saying it was a team that had the 2nd worst record in the league, and it had a bunch of players on it that were, pretty credible. The Carolina Panthers had the guy who was considered to be the number one free agent in this draft, in this free agent class, and Washington just signed 2 of their guys, and people were like, oh, that's pretty good, right? So I don't even know how high you could even get to truly go that way. But that said, they're not clearly going for it in the way, like, there's no, there's I think the stat I had was, of the 19 players that they have signed, including their own re-signings, 15 are purely offense and defense. And of those 15, only 5 got more than a 1-year contract. To me, that reads, we are trying to improve this roster, but we are not going for it. They're not trying to be the surprise team. Now, look, if they draft a rookie quarterback and he turns into C.J. Stroud, guys like Austin Eckler, Jeremy Chinn reach previous heights that, like, there's a reason why they were relatively inexpensive on the market. All that could work out, and they could do well, but I don't. But they're not doing it overtly. This isn't, you know, they're not spending and making bold moves to try to win now. So, you know, I'd go like a four. Does that seem right?
Yeah, I mean, the NFL is not the NBA. The sample size of the NFL regular season is small, 17 games. So you can have a good season without necessarily being a good team. You, in the NFL, can rebuild while still being competitive. You hit on the nature of the contracts being given out by the Commanders in free agency so far. All have been 1, 2, or 3-year contracts. All have been for at most modest money. There have not been any truly big swings. There just have been a lot of swings. This to me makes sense. You diversify the risk. You're not overly dependent on any one of these deals working out. But what do you make of the strategy of the team in free agency?
To me, even though we're saying there's no tanking, I just think realistically this is a multi-year process. You know, people point to Houston and say, look what happened. They draft C.J. Stroud, and all of a sudden they are a playoff team. Well, sure, but the year before they had 2 first-round picks and 2 second-round picks. They had been bad for a few years. They were building something. Right. And so they had more pieces in play than just he showed up. Now, if you want to say that they have pieces in play here because of McLaurin and the 2 tackles and so on, all right. But like, that's not really the same thing. I mean, look, as we're sitting here right now, you know, I don't know that any of their cornerbacks are making the Pro Bowl next year, right? Other than like linebacker and, right? I mean, am I thinking about this right? Other than linebacker, can we really even say that they have improved at any position? I mean, I guess you could say, well, I mean, you know, even if I was about to say Austin Eckler, but it's not like Gibson was bad. He just, you know, it just ran its course. So I don't know that they've, like, improved dramatically. The defensive end scenario, you know, it's not as good as having Montez Sweat and Chase Young. So, you know, they, but on the other hand, I do think what they're doing is pretty good. They're setting a baseline. I mean, the whole thing is restarting. We all can't stand the term culture anymore, but however you want, whatever word you use for that, similar to how like nobody wants to say position flex anymore, whatever word you want to use instead, the you know, that is important. That has to get fixed. This is an entirely new everything. So they're putting in pieces to help do that. I think next year is when, especially if the rookie quarterback, assuming again that happens, doesn't have to be C.J. Stroud, but shows, okay, there's something here. That if we, you know, that next year is when they really maybe get bolder, because the money, they still have a bunch of cap space. That money will carry over, as you know, to next year, whatever's left. So I think that's when things get more interesting. So I have no issue really with what they're doing. I understand it could mean not a lot of wins, but honestly, like, you know, we talk about this all the time with the Wizards or just teams in general. You don't want to be in the middle. You need to be on one end or the other. They were in the middle basically the entire Ron Rivera era, and, you know, it didn't get anywhere. So they need to be – to me, it's okay if they're not super good next year, that they have another top 10 pick. But you just don't want to be like where it's like a joke, where like where wide receivers are running – you know, free all over the place, as we saw last year, where the quarterback is getting sacked 65 times. If they can upgrade on that aspect of it, then I do think it's heading in the right direction. So, I'm fine with what they do. Obviously, a lot's dependent on the quarterback, as we know, but I'm pretty good with what they're doing and the players they're doing it for, the money they're spending. I think it all makes sense to me with the bigger picture in mind.
I was going to ask you which Commanders position group has been most improved via free agency so far. You just said linebacker. I suppose that you could argue edge defender, but linebacker is the answer, right?
Yeah, I mean, right? I mean, obviously, you know, if Jamin Davis was the best linebacker they had, then obviously this was not a particularly impressive group. You know, I don't, you know, look, Cody Barton was probably slandered a bit too much. I mean, he was only a 1-year contract guy that wasn't like he was coming in here to be Jack Lambert or something. Boy, there's me skewing super old. That's even before Mike Singletary, if you want to go that route. But yeah, so I mean, for sure. I mean, look, if Frankie Louvu works out the way he watches the tape and you talk to people around the league, you're like, wow, this guy could be a real energy player. And obviously Bobby Wagner's career speaks for itself. At some point, Father Time will enter that conversation, but, you know, he still was an All-Pro last year. So that's, you know, worlds better than what they had. But, like, you know, I don't even know. You tell me, is there another position where you're like, I mean, okay, center, I guess, if you're going to isolate that on the offensive line. But, you know, in terms of the offensive line as a whole, I mean, we still don't know who the left tackle is. Allegretti is could be good. But, I mean, you know, to some degree, he's you know, another version of Wes Schweitzer. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, linebacker to me is the one where you're like, oh, okay, now we get to look at this world very differently as people who pay attention to this team, because there has not been a strong linebacker group here for some time.
You brought up edge defender Montez Sweat, who, of course, the Commanders this past October 31st traded to the Chicago Bears for a second-round pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, what is the number 40 overall pick in the 2024 Draft. Knowing everything that we now know, how high that second-round pick is, but also how well Sweat did for the Bears, the contract extension that he got from the Bears, and the Commanders this offseason having attacked edge defender by signing Dorrance Armstrong Jr., Cleland Farrell, and Dante Fowler Jr. Should the Commanders have kept Sweat, or was the right call made in trading him?
All right, well, this was the first move, right, that you could feel ownership's fingerprints on. You know, Eugene Shen had been brought on board, or at least they announced it not long before this, and to me, that was the moment I was like, oh, okay, they're getting rid of somebody here. Because, of course, as we discussed 100 times, you can't pay all four of these guys on the line. It's just not tenable to build a full roster. So what are you going to do? Chase was the one where he felt that was the most logical. And I had heard that the Bears at first actually asked about Chase. But then I guess once they got into Montez and the door opened, and, you know, at the time when they made the trade, the Bears were basically picking, you know, had like one of the two or three worst records in the league. So it felt like that pick was going to be pretty high. I mean, picking 40 when the round starts at 33 is hardly low, but like even better. I don't know. It's a tough call. I really like Montez Sweat. I definitely would have loved to seen a world where you keep him. But again, and he's, you know, if you're gonna pay somebody even like this free agency, to me it needed to be somebody whose age matched the timeline. Right? He's still a young guy, he's in his 20s. That would have made sense from that perspective. It wasn't like re-signing an older player to a lot of money. So I would have been okay with that. But, you know, I'll give the ownership this much, or, you know, whoever was technically making the call. Like, it was a lot of uncertainty at that point. You know, when they made the trade, did we expect them to lose every game the rest of the year? Probably not. So, you know, having him right now, if you pencil that in, you would have, hey, so Sweat, Allen, Payne, obviously. Maybe Dorrance Armstrong probably isn't here at that point, but you could have had all the other pieces in play. And because this team still has, last I looked, with over the cap was around $50 million in cap space, give or take. So let's just say Montez Sweat's salary is, you know, the $20 million or so, you take that away. They still have good money. I can go either way on it, I guess, is what I would say. They're going to have to find pass rushers out now, right? I mean, that's part of the deal. It's not going to stun me at all if they use that one of those two second-round picks on an edge. So, I don't know. I would have liked Montez Sweat. If you asked me personally, I probably would say, yeah, I probably would have kept him. But I'm not going to sit here and go, well, that was a mistake at the time. I understood they were really just like, we don't want to commit money. We need to see where this world looks like at the end of the year and go from there. We'll take our chances with the pick and the cap space and figure it out later.
Perhaps the two most notable defections for the Commanders in free agency this offseason have been safety Cameron Curl and corner Kendall Fuller. Notable not just for who they are as players, but for the underwhelming contracts that Curl and Fuller got. Curl with the Los Angeles Rams has signed a two-year contract for a reported $9 million. Fuller with the Miami Dolphins has signed a reported two-year $15 million contract with $7.975 million fully guaranteed at signing. For whatever reasons, the markets for these guys as unrestricted free agents were not very good. I get that Fuller is going into not just his age 29 season, but also his ninth NFL season, so considerable mileage. But why didn't the Commanders re-sign either guy, given his depressed market.
Yeah, well, like with Kendall, you know, like you said, the age timeline doesn't quite work for a multi-year deal. That was only 2 years. I guess basically, like I said before, if you view the 2024 season as something of like a redshirt season for expectations, right? What does it matter to an extent that having Kendall Fuller there, even if he was their best cornerback? But I would also say that, you know, one advantage that the host of the Al Galdi podcast has is that if you decide Al Galdi needs to take a pay cut, you're making the decision. I don't think people typically stay in their place of employment and take less money. That's just sort of the bottom line. I just don't think that it would be, you know, what is Kendall Fuller going to say? Yeah, I'll go back to the exact same place for less than that he was getting. You know, what he was getting on average $10 million over the last 4 years. And what did he get here? 8. And I haven't seen the contract details, so I don't know what's guaranteed or what's funny money or whatever. But I think there's a lot there. But my sense is they just didn't pursue him, and you know, is what it is. Cam Curl, I think, is more straightforward. And clearly, Cam Curl's side thought they were going to get more money. Clearly, a lot of people right here did. And you know, they signed Jeremy Chinn on what, day one of free agency, and I think that was their replacement, and they moved on. Like, they weren't going to wait around for whatever the market was going to bear. And, you know, obviously for Cam Curl, bad timing, I guess, with there was something like Justin Simmons is still unsigned right now. I've stopped looking at the list of free agent safeties because it's not relevant here anymore. But, you know, crowded market, I think teams weren't, at least I didn't talk to 32 teams or anything, but like, you know, at least with a couple of people I've talked to, you know, weren't blown away by his tape. Obviously, we know about the lack of takeaways. So, you know, I think they just made their move on safety pretty early. And while, you know, sure, we could sit here and say that Cam Curl would be better than some of the other guys they have, you know, Quan Martin was a second round pick who I did think looked better as the year went on. Derek Forrest clearly was struggling earlier in the year before his injury, but there's something there. Percy Butler, young depth, you know, what have you. Like, they moved on. And I think it's more to me if Cam, and again, like for Cam Curl, it would not have been a pay cut. But if you had told Cam Curl in before free agency started, hey, here's the deal you're going to get. Do you want to take it from Washington or somewhere else? Then maybe there's more of a discussion. But clearly they thought they were going to get more. They tested the market. Washington's like, cool, we're going to go make a move now. And that's what they did.
Much more with Ben Standig in moments. I'm going to next ask him about an under-discussed holdover in the Commander's front office, but something that should never be under-discussed is the greatness of the law firm of Paulson and Nace. If you have been harmed by the negligence of someone else, or if someone who you care about has been harmed by the negligence of someone else, always know that Paulson and Nace is there for you. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Call 202-902-7611. And when you call, make sure that you tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace has won millions of dollars for clients and was just named as part of U.S. News and World Report's Best Law Firms 2024 edition. Paulson and Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C. and West Virginia. Paulson and Nace fights for victims of all kinds of situations, including victims of errors made during diagnosis, during surgery, or with medication, victims of injuries caused by dangerous medications or medical devices, as well as defective auto parts, victims of accidents involving cars, trucks, bikes, or motorcycles, victims of deceptive trade practices and false advertising, heck, victims of shady lawyers. If your attorney acts in bad faith, is unethical, and his or her counsel, or is negligent in his or her work, you could have a claim for legal malpractice. Paulson and Nace has represented corporate clients throughout the region. Attorneys Chris Nace and Matt Nace are experienced trial attorneys who are not afraid to take cases to trials, and that's because Paulson and Nace wins trials. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged, but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit PaulsonandNace.com. That's PaulsonandNace.com. Don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, if you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. We're talking with Commanders insider Ben Standing of The Athletic. The Commanders' new look front office has Adam Peters as general manager and Lance Newmark as assistant general manager. Also has plenty of holdovers. The holdovers who've gotten the most attention are Martin Mayhew, who has gone from general manager to senior personnel executive slash advisor to the GM, and Marty Herney, who has gone from executive vice president of football slash player personnel to an advisor for the team. But also still with the team is senior vice president of football administration, Rob Rogers, who had been the team's salary cap slash contract guy. As far as you know, it is Rogers who has been doing the contracts for the Commanders and free agency this offseason?
As far as I know, yeah. My sense was, you know, we're all kind of laughing about how busy it's been. Well, somebody has to be the administrator for all this, right? Somebody has to be the one negotiating the contracts and, you know, getting the deals done. And so he's the one. As far as I know, they didn't hire anybody to be another pencil pusher, right? So, Rob Rogers. I think what'll be interesting is what happens once this is all done. Like, a lot of times, like, I imagine there will still be several changes in the front office once they get past the draft. This is typically how these things work. Front office and scouts stay through the draft because there's already too much research and homework, and it's, you know, so they wait. And then we'll see. And I guess this, maybe Rogers falls in that bucket, but, you know, he's obviously had a chance to show the staff what he thinks. And, you know, obviously one of the interesting points is, you know, everybody has a boss. Does Rob Rogers, because he was with Rivera at Carolina, and clearly Rivera leaned on him a ton that first year when he was during COVID and he was sick. But so does Rob Rogers now with a new staff say, okay, this is what you want me to do? Cool, I'll do X. And it just works, maybe? I mean, he's been doing this for a while. So, yeah, that to me will be interesting once they get past the, maybe even for agency, but past the draft, you know, what happens with him.
It stands out that Martin Mayhew was retained but has been demoted. Marty Herney was retained but has been demoted. Rob Rogers has been retained but still has the same job that he had prior to the front office revamping. He is well thought of. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, I mean, when I talk to agents, sometimes that comes up. And, you know, again, depending on, the, you know, the agents aren't perfect either. They got their own thoughts and agendas and, you know, what headaches to deal with. But, yeah, I think in general, Rogers has been a guy that's, you know, viewed as being pretty good, pretty professional. You know, again, the question always is for, like, that spot, when you're talking about the salary cap, do they see the edges? Like, do they, you know, you're not trying to presumably screw the player, but, you know, you've got to be prudent. You've got to be, get the best deal. You know, his responsibility is the team. You know, I think one of the issues we had with the Rivera era was they just never seemed to look outside the box or beyond the next move. What was the then what? Well, how does all these things tie together? I don't, you know, it's hard to say with Rogers, but I put more of that thinking on Rivera as opposed to other people. Now it's a new group. To, you know, clearly Josh Harris is going to be somewhat of a forward thinker just based on his business track background. Peters, we're learning about, but, you know, clearly I think we're assuming a more modern approach with a lot of things. So, yeah, I mean, if Rogers can fit in with that, then, yeah, I think, you know, not only he could stay, and, you know, I do think he's well-regarded, but, again, you know, somebody else is out calling the shots that he's working within, so how does that look?
A simple question, perhaps a complicated answer. why did the Commanders trade quarterback Sam Howell?
Well, I would say a couple things. I know, like, a lot of people were saying, well, why not just keep him? It's a cheap contract. He could be your third string. You know, what if the backup gets hurt? You know, what if you need the third string? Well, okay, one, as I said before, this is not a season they're trying to win the Super Bowl. You can't think that far deep for any of this. Now, I mean, I'm not saying they can't have a third quarterback. I'm just saying on a team that last year won four games and this year I don't know what they'll win, but I don't think it'll be nine or up would be my assumption right now. the third quarterback does not matter. Okay. Now, in terms of Sam Howell, like, the reason, like, the Bears traded Justin Fields, even though they ultimately didn't get much, was there was going to be drama if you keep them both, him and the Caleb Williams, presumably, right? The constant uncomfortable situation in the locker room. I mean, they may get along, be BFFs, but, I mean, in general, potential, one of them is sitting, so there's potential drama there, and, you know, that can fester and lead to more issues and so on. So they moved on from that. Now, Sam Howell wouldn't be the exact same thing, obviously, but at the same time, you know, what if the rookie starts and they go 0-3? I'm sure people who do things like you, not saying you, but people who do things, who talk about these things for a living would be like, hey, why don't you go back to the other guy? At least he won a game, you know, whatever. But also, like, Sam Howell's value as the third string quarterback to the rest of the league goes down the toilet. What? Right now, there were, as I reported, there were at least four teams in the mix to try to acquire him. Obviously, they didn't, like, break the bank with the deal that they got. And it was only pick swaps. They didn't get, like, new picks. But they did move into the third, which is a significant bump overall. Why would that trade be there in a year from now? They got more for him than the Bears got for Fields because of that second year in part. I mean, I just think there's questions how the league views Fields, but the 2 years matters. It's not, if you can do the 1 year, well, then it's, you're literally just getting to be the backup. Now Seattle is like, okay, we'll see. Maybe he becomes our guy if things work out. So I just think from Washington's perspective, they're going to commit to the number two guy, whether that means he starts day one or just they build around him. And Howell would have been the third guy. And also, like, in terms of, like, so why not just, why just skip Mariota part? Well, I think they wanted a veteran around the young quarterback to help show the ropes. And also, you know, we'll see. I'm still of the mindset that they should not start the rookie week one and maybe not even into week 10. I would be very cautious because we see over and over again these guys get thrown out and then they all get blown up. The 2021 draft, what a disaster, right? I mean, it was not viewed as a good draft. No, 22 draft, the Sam Howell year. It wasn't viewed as a good one coming in, but it has been even worse, it feels like. And, you know, the 2021 draft too, right? Other than Trevor Lawrence and, you know, who's working out of the guys who are picked in the first round. So I think they got to maybe even rethink how you use quarterbacks. And you got to put all your efforts into the new kid. And I don't see how Sam Howell, he's either going to get fewer reps in practice as the third string, and he's still learning his way as the backup. I think they want to maximize that rookie. And, you know, say whatever you want about Mariota, he's been there, done that. He was, in fact, his own, a number two pick. So I just think they view that as a better fit, and therefore, what is the point to a degree of having Sam Howell sitting on your bench?
I thought that it was worth keeping Sam Howell, continuing to develop him and seeing where the team's quarterback situation went, especially given that he has two seasons left on this ultra cheap rookie contract as a fifth round pick in the 2022 draft. There are no guarantees with whichever quarterback the Commanders get via their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft, assuming that the team gets a quarterback via that pick. I would have mitigated that risk at least somewhat by still having Sam. What the trade says to me is that Adam Peters does not see much upside in Sam and is not a big believer in Sam ever becoming a quality NFL quarterback. I mean, Adam Peters, just 2 months into his tenure as Commanders general manager, traded Sam. That says a lot, and we'll see if Adam's right about Sam.
Well, you know, if they had picked, like, the way they had the previous, you know, 16 for Dotson and Forbes, I know they traded down to get the 16 for Dotson, but if they were picking in that range, Sam Howell may very well be the starting quarterback or the projected starting quarterback, right? Because, you know, we're seeing right now with the Vikings, they want to move up, but, like, it's going to be, you know, they're going to have to pay a lot to do it, and 16's even way further down. So, if four quarterbacks go in the top 10, you know, or top 5, then what do you, you know, how are you getting – you know, how are you getting a better quarterback other than signing a veteran in free agency? But that's not where they're at. They're at two. They're, you know, guaranteed if they want to take a quarterback there. And I just think when you make that investment, you've got to go all in on that guy. Remember a few years ago when Dwayne Haskins was a rookie and you had Dwayne Haskins, Colt McCoy, and Case Keenum. Clearly, Dwayne was not ready. In the eyes of the coaching staff and reality, based on once we saw him play, and it was this debate. about, well, how many are they giving him enough reps? And it was like, oh, you got to get more reps. Well, I mean, what are you supposed to do? You have games to try to win, right? I mean, obviously Jay was in a tough spot. He didn't last for too long, etc. But like, he's not trying. Like at that point, he's not trying to, quote unquote. If you asked on the 1 to 10 scale tanking scale with Jay Gruden, it's a -6. He's not trying to tank because he knows what's going to happen if they lose, and it did happen. But what are you supposed to do, right? I mean, he's trying to win. He thinks, you know, Case Keenum or Colt McCoy's got to be the guy he's got to get more work to help the win now, and Dwayne is there. So I don't think there's enough reps to give three quarterbacks the work you need. And because Sam Howell is a developing guy, I just don't – I mean, I think it's just easy for all of us to say, well, just develop him. Well, okay, but, like, in a real earnest way, I don't think you can do that. And I would also point to, you know, who knows what's going to happen here with this young kid. But when the, you know, in the years when they drafted RG3 and Kirk Cousins, I guess, an example, not to bring that up, but like I reread this the other day. I was writing for patch.com as like, you know, this random freelancer. And the article I wrote after that draft was they made a mistake here, not because Kirk Cousins is good or not, but because they've got to be 100% confident that RG3 is not going to be insecure, because Kirk Cousins would be a peer and you would be like, hey, Kirk Cousins could arguably have been, not on what we saw, RG3 was better, but as we've seen, Kirk Cousins is the better quarterback, and RG3 could have been insecure. I think All In for Week 1 was a total reflection on him not wanting Kirk Cousins to get in that starting lineup in a real way. So you never know how these things go. And Sam Howell would be going to his third year, the rookie is the rookie, but I don't know. Is it not reasonable to think Sam Howell would be the better quarterback day one? Probably, right? Just because of experience. What does that do for anybody? Maybe these things are overthinking it, but I think all that kind of goes into play. I think the thing would have been, could you have left Sam be the two? I don't know. I mean, again, it depends how much do they think that mentorship matters. If they think it matters a lot, can't do it. If they think that's poppycock, you have 100 coaches, you have David Blau here, who was in the league last year, if that's enough, well, then maybe that would have been the way to go, and that would have been interesting. But I assume they wanted a veteran one way or the other.
Yeah, I think that mentorship stuff is overblown. People talked about Jacoby Brissett's great quarterback mentorship of Sam Howell last season. Look, I don't doubt that Jacoby was a really good teammate, but Sam got worse as last season went on. So ultimately, what did that mentorship mean? Like you said, the Commanders have plenty of coaches who can mentor their young quarterback. It's funny looking back on the Redskins in the 2012 draft, taking a quarterback in Robert Griffin III with the number 2 overall pick, and then taking a quarterback in Kirk Cousins in the 4th round. Yes, that led to RG3 insecurity, which I think said more about Robert than it said about anything else. But in hindsight, the Skins drafting Kirk, as unpopular as it was, although not in my opinion at the time, was a really smart move because he turned out to be the better quarterback. So as uncomfortable as the situation may be, that doesn't make it the wrong situation. Final question. You brought up something that I have not heard anyone else bring up, but I think is a smart thought. The Commanders this offseason perhaps not using a lot more of their ample salary cap space and carrying over the space into next offseason with the idea of next offseason having a better sense of where things are at. Is that, in fact, the strategy being employed by the team?
I don't know this. This is not reporting. This is not any of that stuff. I 100% think that's what's going on here. I mean, like I said, it lines up with the way, you know, the type of contracts that they're giving out right now, right? If they were more in of like, hey, we really need to win this year, then you go out and use some more of that money to go get whatever. But they're not doing that. They're getting guys who are on the, you know, inexpensive leader, you know, solid role model type guys for the whole locker room. And that serves a specific purpose, but that specific purpose is not definitively winning today. And I do think, yes, the point would be, see where you're at. See where this rookie quarterback is at. Does he give you CJ Stroud, Justin Herbert, rookie vibes? In which case, I mean, look what Houston just did this offseason. They have been spending, right? They've gone out and gotten legit players. They've made some bold moves because they say, hey, we can win right now. But if CJ Stroud had come in and been like a regular rookie, you know, ups and downs, and, you know, they don't make the playoffs, I don't know what they're doing. So, yeah, I think you wait till next year. You see where you're at. You still have the rookie contract money to play with. And also it gives them a chance to assess everything, right? Not just including, you know, the players on the field, their own staff. And then I think you have a better feel for what you have and get bold. So, yes, I do think that carrying over money, I don't know if that's $20 million or $50 million, but, like, carrying over that money definitely helps. They're going to sign more players, but if you really look at it right now, if you take the draft and assume that the first 2 days you can fill in starter roles or high rotation roles with those guys, I'm not saying they're done, but kind of done, right? I mean, they've kind of, they'll draft a tackle, we will assume, in the second round, and then you go from there. So, yeah, I think they've done what they wanted to do, and that includes having money to carry over.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Commanders insider, Ben Standing of The Athletic. Ben, thanks, and we'll talk soon.
Al, always a pleasure, man.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The main event of the college basketball season, the NCAA tournament, started on Tuesday night with two games, each of which involved a team from Washington, D.C. or Virginia, and each team lost. We begin with what happened late night on Tuesday night, a horrendous ending to Virginia's season. Number 10-seeded Virginia lost to number 10-seeded Colorado State 67-42. At UD Arena in Dayton, Ohio, late night on Tuesday night in a first four game in the NCAA tournament. Yes, 67-42, a 25-point loss. Now, nothing for Virginia in an NCAA tournament will ever be as embarrassing as what happened on March 16th, 2018, when Virginia became the first number one seed in NCAA tournament history to lose to a number 16 seed. And the Cavaliers, as you may recall, weren't just any number one seed. They were the number one overall seed. And the loss wasn't some nail biter. It was a 74-54 blowout loss to number 16-seeded UMBC in Charlotte, North Carolina. So it's impossible to top the embarrassment of that loss. But this loss to Colorado State was bad. The Cavs trailed by at least 13 points for all of the second half. The Cavs scored a mere 42 points, including just 14 points in the first half. The Cavs' shooting was horrendous. They went just 3 of 17 on threes, just 11 of 39 on twos, and just 11 of 17 on free throws. The Cavs got out-rebounded 43-24, and the Cavs' defense, well, far from their biggest problem, was not great. What a strange season this was for the Wahoos. They, in the regular season, went 22-9 overall, including 13-7 in the ACC. You hear those records, you say, okay, the Hoos should have been a shoo-in to make the NCAA tournament, and yet the Hoos barely made the NCAA tournament. Why? Well, they were like two different teams. The Hoos in the regular season went 15-2 at home versus 7-7 away from home. And it's not just that. Each of the seven losses away from home was by at least 16 points. The Hoos this season, for whatever reasons, had a penchant for not just losing away from home, but for getting demolished away from home. And sure enough, the Hoos, late night on Tuesday night, got demolished away from home once again. This was UVA head coach Tony Bennett during his post-game press conference late night on Tuesday night off a game in which starters Reese Beekman and Isaac McNeely went a combined 6 of 29 from the field, 2 of 9 on threes and 4 of 20 on twos.
Yeah, I mean, right now it probably sounds or feels like hollow praise, but you know, knowing how Reese led us and to get to this point, to win 23 games and where they finished in the ACC is a credit to them. And I think you saw it tonight, you know, when teams really make it hard on Isaac and Reese, it's tough. We've had a number of games where we've gotten beat handily, and the credit goes to Colorado State. They are a hard-nosed, tough defensive team, and they run their stuff well. Nico does a great job, and their physicality bothered us. But, you know, I look at the job Reese did on their excellent point guard, Isaiah Stevens. He did the job there. They just had some ways. I thought Jordan gave us a lift and stretches. But there's a hard way to go out. There's no question about that. But I'm proud of these guys for getting us to this point. It is a hard tournament to qualify, and you want to be playing your best when you get into it. And obviously, we did not do that. And but it doesn't change anything about you know, this guy's career and what he's done for 4 years. I've never seen a guy get better and better. And someone's going to be very fortunate at the pro level to have this guy. So, but I'm grateful for the way they are, and it's just a tough way to go out, of course.
Talking about Reese Beekman, UVA for this season in Division I men's basketball is number 7 in KenPom.com's adjusted defensive efficiency, which is points allowed per 100 possessions adjusted for opponents, but also is number 211 in KenPom.com's adjusted offensive efficiency, which is points per 100 possessions adjusted for opponents. Very good defensively. Very bad offensively. We later in Tony Bennett's postgame presser late night on Tuesday night had this exchange with longtime ACC basketball writer and columnist David Teal of Richmond.com.
Tony, in early February in Tallahassee, you guys scored 80 points. That was your 8th consecutive ACC win. And from there, this team just seemed to lose its touch offensively. What happened in your mind?
Yeah, I think teams started really zoning off, gapping up on some guys, and just making it so hard for Reese and Isaac. They kind of face guarded, zoned off, and then they got a little bit of a blueprint on how to bother us. And we tried to come up with some different things, and you know, and I thought we played good ball against NC State and even BC and in a Georgia Tech at the end, but a lot of it was predicated. We needed to make some shots, and then even, you know, the free throws, but we had to hit some shots just to give us a chance. But they were hard because of how it was jammed in the lane, zoned off of guys, and really face guarding or making it difficult on the others. And I think that kind of started happening as people saw, well, here's a way to maybe make it real challenging on us.
So UVA this season made the NCAA tournament for a 9th time over the last 10 seasons in which there has been an NCAA tournament. Remember, no NCAA tournament in 2020 due to COVID, although UVA would have made the NCAA tournament that season. Tony Bennett has done a very good job as UVA head coach. Heck, UVA famously won the national title in 2019, the year after that loss to UMBC, but the Cavs now have lost their first game in each of their last 3 NCAA tournament appearances and in 4 of the program's last 5 NCAA tournament appearances, 2018, 2021, 2023, and 2024. Last season, March 16th, 2023, number 4-seeded Virginia lost to number 13-seeded Furman 68-67 at Amway Center in Orlando, Florida in the first round of the 2023 NCAA tournament. The Cavs blew a 12-point second-half lead. March 20th, 2021, number 4-seeded Virginia lost to number 13-seeded Ohio 62-58 at Indiana University's Assembly Hall in the first round of the 2021 NCAA tournament. There has been this feeling that the way that Tony Bennett coaches with this hyper-focus on defense works against the team being good in NCAA tournaments because good offensive players don't want to go to UVA. But of course, the argument against Bennett's coaching style being conducive to the team not doing well in NCAA tournaments is 2019 when the program won the national title. I mean, if Tony Bennett's coaching style is inherently flawed, how the heck did the team win the national title? But yeah, a good number of disappointing losses for UVA in NCAA tournaments under Bennett. There's no denying that. As for Howard, the number 16-seeded Bison lost to number 16-seeded Wagner 71-68 at UD Arena in Dayton, Ohio on Tuesday evening. Howard trimmed a 17-point second-half deficit to 1 in the final minute, but ultimately fell short. The Bison missed 3 threes in the closing seconds, but still a terrific season for Howard, which won the MEAC tournament for a second consecutive season and thus made the NCAA tournament in back-to-back seasons for the first time ever. The Bison's head coach, Kenneth Blakeney, is doing a really good job. He was hired in May 2019, knows the area well, went to DeMatha Catholic High School in Hyattsville, Maryland, played for legendary head coach Morgan Wooten, and then played collegiately at Duke. And also on Tuesday night was Virginia Tech beginning its run in the 2024 NIT, and that run began with a win. The number 3-seeded Hokies ripped Richmond 74-58 at Castle Coliseum in Blacksburg, Virginia, late night on Tuesday night. Nice win for Tech against the Richmond team that won a share of the A-10 regular season title. The Hokies in the first half trailed by 9 points at 20-11, but then won the rest of the game 63-38. 6'10 center Lynn Kidd, he in just 25 minutes as a starter, went 9 of 10 from the field, all twos and 2 of 2 on free throws. He finished with 20 points and 8 rebounds. Did have no assists versus 2 turnovers. A 6'1 point guard, Sean Padula, 37 minutes as a starter, 1 of 3 on threes, 4 of 9 on twos, and 6 of 6 on free throws. He finished with 17 points and 7 assists versus 1 turnover. Next up for Virginia Tech is a second round game at number 2-seeded Ohio State this weekend. Well, when we talk Wizards on this podcast, there's a player who we have not talked about much this season. That player is Johnny Davis, who the Wizards took with the number 10 overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft. And the reason that we have not talked much about Johnny Davis is that he has not done much. The Wizards taking him with that number 10 overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft continues to look like a really bad decision. And we on Tuesday night got more reason to believe this. So the Wizards got blown out by the Houston Rockets 137-114 at Capital One Arena on Tuesday night to fall to an NBA worst 11-58 this regular season. The Wizards in the third quarter actually held a lead, a 4-point lead at 66-62, but they then lost the rest of the game 75-48. The Wizards, who are quite bad to begin with, are depleted big time right now. Absences for the Wizards on Tuesday night included the following. Kyle Kuzma did not play for a second consecutive game due to left shoulder soreness. Bilal Coulibaly did not play as the Wizards on Monday evening announced that he was done for the season due to a right wrist fracture. Denny Avdija did not play for a third consecutive game due to a right knee contusion. Tyus Jones did not play for for a third consecutive game due to a back injury. Marvin Bagley III did not play for an eighth consecutive game due to a back injury. Landry Shamet did not play for a fifth consecutive game due to a left calf strain. Eugene Omoruyi did not play due to a sprained right ankle. And we are still waiting on 7-foot Tristan Vukcevic to play. The Wizards last Thursday evening announced the signing of him to a multi-year deal. The Wizards in the 2023 NBA draft took him with the number 42 overall pick. So a lot of guys unavailable to the Wizards right now. And so Wizards interim head coach Brian Keefe, Chief Keefe, he on Tuesday night played just 9 players. 8 of the 9 players each scored at least 12 points. The one Wizards player who did not score at least 12 points was Johnny Davis. Now he started, but he in 27 minutes, 17 seconds as a starter scored a mere 2 points. He went 1 of 7 from the field, 0 of 1 on threes, and 1 of 6 on twos. He had 1 rebound and no assists, barely any impact on the game. Having a sizable impact on the game was 6'6 Jalen Green. The Wizards got shredded by Green. He in just 35 minutes, 42 seconds had 42 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists versus 1 turnover, and a plus-minus rating of plus 26. He went 7 of 13 on threes, 5 of 8 on twos, and 11 of 13 on free throws. Green in the Rockets' 39-point first quarter scored 19 points. Green in the Rockets' 41-point third quarter scored 15 points. So the Wizards had just 20 free throw attempts to the Rockets' 36. So the Wizards went 15 to 20 on free throws. The Rockets went 30 to 36 on free throws. The Wizards did go 15 to 39 on threes. That's good. But also went just 27 of 59 on twos. Also lost despite having 17 offensive rebounds to the Rockets' 12. Next up for the Wizards, home to the Sacramento Kings Thursday night at 7. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Thursday show, episode 788. We'll provide you with more on the Commanders. Also on Thursday show, I'll talk Capitals. The Caps are home to the Toronto Maple Leafs Wednesday night at 7:30. Have a great rest of your Wednesday, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.
This is a recalibrate. You know, finding our north again. And that starts, you know, with our identity of our club. So, no, you will not hear me say the word rebuild at all.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.